Well, as you are hearing there, the future's electric when it comes to getting about, and transportation will have to be a top priority in the coming decades as we confront the climate change crisis. In June of this year, the Irish government published its major blueprint on how Ireland will reach its targets on greenhouse emission reduction set for 2030 and 2050. But how will it actually go about achieving them? Richard Bruton, Minister for Communications, Climate Action and Environment, has responsibility for the plan and how it's going to be delivered. Eini Ní Lonna has been speaking with him.
What do you think of the plan, Minister?
Well, I think it's ambitious, but I think it's realistic. We've gone about this to try and identify things that will be both sensible and fair. So we've identified the sort of changes that can achieve what we need to achieve with the least burden on people and the most opportunity. The reason we're doing it, of course, is that it's vital for the generations and the children to come that we make sure that the planet we pass on is resilient, but more importantly, that Irish farms, Irish enterprises, Irish homes are resilient in the face of major change that is going to occur. You know, the reality is that this is the biggest global challenge that the world faces. We, in the last number of years, have achieved remarkable things in Ireland. You know, we've seen great constitutional change. We've seen an economy come from, you know, near bankruptcy to full employment. But this is the biggest challenge that the globe faces, and we must show that we're able to conquer that as well.
You were a former Minister for Education, so you'll understand when I say, why is this all the I'm sure Oshtonach? Why is it all the future tense? We must do, we will. Why is it taking so long? This is not news. We have known that the planet is warming up for absolutely ages. We had plans for 2020. We were going to have all kinds of electric cars by 2020. 2020 is around the corner, and we have 3,000 electric cars in the country at the moment and hardly a charging point for any of them. So why, and I mean, why is it taking so long? Why are we still talking about the future tense?
Well, I suppose the background to this is the economic crash. When the economic crash came and we saw, you know, hundreds of thousands of people emigrate, we saw 30% of employment fall in some sectors, 300,000 jobs lost, we were back on track. So our climate trajectory seemed like we were going to hit our targets. But however, when we started to see some economic recovery occur, it became clear that we had failed to break the link between restoring economic well-being and carbon emissions. And specifically, the areas where we failed were in transport, in enterprise and in agriculture. All of those areas, as the economy started to recover, as the dairy herd was built, as enterprises grew employment again, we saw once again the growth of emissions. So we have to take a strong stance now. There were targets, as you rightly say, for 2020, but those targets haven't been delivered. They were enshrined in law, so Ireland will pay penalties for failing. But I believe, and the government believes, that we have to get ourselves back on track. We have to correct the flaws in each of the sectors, in the transport sector, in agriculture, in enterprise, and indeed in the built environment, which includes our own homes. And we have to move away from the 85% fossil dependence that we have in this country.
We have 60,000 tonnes of CO2 emissions every single year. So on, we have, you know, whatever, less than 5 million people in the country. But per head, on transport, we put up 2.6 tonnes, whereas the European average is 1.8. On electricity, we actually emit 2.6 tonnes per head, whereas the European average is 2.3. On agriculture, we emit 4 tonnes per head. The European average is 0.8. Now, they had crashes too. They had to recover their economies. Why are we so, so much higher than everybody else? You know, if they can get their emissions down, why can't we?
Well, in each case, it's different. In the electricity area, we have moved quite significantly. We're now 30% renewables. But in many countries, you have a nuclear industry or you have hydro industries, and that has allowed some countries to have much better performance. But the good news is we are committing now to move to 70% renewables on the Irish grid, and that will be very demanding because we will need to see more wind farms, more infrastructure to support renewable energy. We want to extend micro generation for individuals to get involved. We want to see community generation involved in creating renewables. So that's in the electricity area.
Can we stay with electricity now for a minute before moving on? So I can tell you something to do immediately that will sort out 49% of emissions from electricity, and that is to close down Money Point this minute and close down the two peat burning stations. 49% of our emissions from electricity generation comes from burning coal and turf, and it's crackers. We're burning those turf stations, and they could be closed down in the morning. People work there. I'd realise that they would have to be re-employed. They would have to be looked after. I'm not saying don't do that, but once the turf is gone, it's gone. It's a carbon source. It's a carbon sink. It's totally inefficient way of making electricity. It's causing pollution in the air. You, as the minister, with a stroke of a pen, could close those down tomorrow. Why don't you?
Well, we have committed to close them down in a phased basis.
In 2027 and 2027, more Amshire Oshinok. Why not now?
Because every day we need power, and whether it's power to drive our businesses, our farms, our homes, we need that power.
Money Point was closed down for three months.
You've all the answers yourself, so well, work away.
Yeah. Money Point was closed down for a couple of months in the winter, and the squid didn't go down. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but you have to, when the wind doesn't blow, as in, say, a cold winter's day, the wind doesn't blow and you have everyone want to turn on their heat, what do you do then?
Well, you have backups with gas, yes, which is a less significant one. Not coal and peat, I'm saying.
So where do you get those gas stations?
Well, we have gas stations already. Our Dublin one is gas.
So, in other words, if you're going to take out some major part of your generation, like Money Point, you have to make sure that you're still in a position to deliver power to the people who need it. So you have to build up your alternatives. We have to build up our renewable capacity to make sure that we have alternatives. So that's why we'll need more wind farms coming on to meet the rising demand. We will take coal and peat out of the system, and we'll have to replace them with other fallbacks. And they will include new gas stations, which can come in at very short notice. We will also have to start looking in the longer term at new storage, a bit like Thurlock Hill, new options. But those are all big changes that we have to take time to invest. You can't, you know, turn a switch. The same as in transport. You can't say, you know, we're now 97% dependent on fossil fuels. Why isn't everyone driving electric cars? You have to do this over stages, because an electric car is more expensive. You have to make sure that people can afford it. So you have to do a plan. And that's really what this is. This is a 10-year plan. There aren't silver bullets in this sphere. You know, there aren't easy, painless solutions like you're suggesting. You know, switch off Money Point and the job is up. So you just have to plan to make sure that, you know, the lights will still be on, people will still be able to go about their daily lives. And that's really important. You know, energy security to sustain the standard of living that we enjoy is really important.
Now, we've been talking about emissions putting things up into the environment, up into the atmosphere. The way of getting carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere is by photosynthesis, and the best things at doing them are trees. So we have 11% of the country covered in trees, one of the lowest rates in Europe, and yet a 40-year-old fully grown tree can contain 5 tonnes of CO2. You have said in this plan that we were talking about that 8,000 hectares of forestry is going to be planted every year in order to increase this amount, because it will be a carbon sink. Now, we did 3,000 hectares last year. How are we going to lash it up to 8,000 hectares in a country where people don't like trees, frankly?
Well, again, that will have to be developed. It's much like our renewable. You will have to plan the way that's being delivered. As you know, at the moment, there's a very substantial subsidy. Indeed, the entire cost of planting is supported. And someone who devotes a hectare gets 15 years of payment. And then the the timber at the end of that is tax-free. But as you say, there's still there's question marks about that. I think you will have heard the European Commissioner talk about the need for every farmer to be considering having some part of their farm devoted to forestry. So, you know, that is one area that I'm sure will be explored. I think the Minister responsible for forestry will be looking to both public and private sector to see how this can be developed. I think we need to encourage diversification in our farming, as you recognise that at the moment farming is contributing a lot to the emission output. It has the potential to change the way it works to start to reduce that. And you'll see not just the forestry objective, but changing the way fertilisers are used, changing the way manures are spread, changing the management of herd. These are also very much at the heart of the plan. So agriculture can contribute to reducing it. And Chagas has very usefully done work on showing the interventions that farmers can make that are actually, many of them are beneficial to the farm. They, even if there was no carbon challenge, they would be the right things to do. They are cost-effective things to do. And I think it's really important that we move on all fronts to see that agriculture makes its contribution. And I'm delighted to say that they are shaping up to make those contributions.
So, mind you, the trees incentives have been in for a long time, so there's definitely needing to be a public awareness change in that, hence our wildlife programme, and hence the whole idea of getting people to realise that, you know, growing trees is not something awful to do with your land, but something positive. Because in actual fact, I mean, I didn't come to agriculture because we were talking about the other matters, but actually 1/3 of our emissions come from agriculture. So therefore, if some of the areas where cattle are reared with absolute subsidies for everything, surely if the same subsidies were maybe given to the farmers, because you don't make money on beef only from the subsidies. That's really what makes them, in some marginal areas, better able to do it at all. So, I mean, if they were able to have maybe put some solar panels on their land, grow biofuels, grow trees, and get the same sort of subsidies, why wouldn't they do it?
Yeah, there does need to be a move to new incentives, and I think the new Common Agricultural Policy will be very much looking at that. 40% of the money coming from the new Common Agricultural Policy is going to have to be paid in connection with either reduction of carbon emissions, or greenhouse gas emissions rather, or other environmental gains. So the new Common Agricultural Policy will be built around that. And as you rightly say, even though there's very substantial subsidies towards forestry at the moment, there is a resistance to it, and you see that too much of it is concentrated in individual regions. We need to see it more spread. And I think that will be a challenge for the Department of Agriculture and Forestry in meeting their target, in looking at how do you get that spread. But I think the Common Agricultural Policy and new incentives, as you say, are a way of developing those alternatives.
Yeah, just to finish now, carbon credits. We have to pay carbon, we buy carbon credits because we don't always meet our targets, and this is just spending money on that. I mean, surely spending, what did we spent already, something like 86 million euros on carbon credits just so that we won't be fined. I mean, if that money is available for that, surely it's available for doing something more positive than paying to buy our way out of sin.
Well, these are penalties.
Yeah.
These are failures. They aren't cash in hand. These are penalties for the fact that over the last number of years we haven't got our house in order. We now have to, in order to avoid penalties in the future, make the changes in the way we run our homes and our farms and our enterprises and our power system so that we will meet those targets. So Europe isn't giving us a big pot of money, or there's no one with a pot of money offering us to say, you know, make these changes. What we have to do, all of us, is to look at our own lives and see how the changes can be made. It has to be said, taxpayers won't be in a position to pay for everything. So while we will support people who are most exposed or least equipped to meet the challenges of change, we can't pay for all the change. So people will have to say, well, next time I'm not going to buy a diesel car, I'm going to switch to electric. Or people will have to say, you know, in the interests of the future of my home, I'm maybe going to look less at that new kitchen and more at the fabric of the house to make sure that, you know, this house is resilient for the future and the changes that are coming our way. So it does require us to think differently about some of the priorities we set in our lives, the ways we spend our money, the way we manage materials, whether, you know, be recycling and preventing waste in the first place. You know, all of these are part of the changes we have to try to internalise. But, you know, government, while we can create a framework and take the lead in key areas like renewable power, we require all the communities, all individuals to come with us to make the changes that will make the difference in the long term.
We've only 11 years left, so you're optimistic we'll have it turned around well before 2030.
Well, I think 2030 is only the start. I think, as you know, Europe, and we support it, is committing to net zero by 2050. So achieving the reductions by 2030 are the start of a longer journey. But it's really important that we start that momentum. And I have selected the things that are sensible in that they're at the lowest cost to people and that open up the most opportunity. And I think it's important to see this also as opportunity. You know, there will be opportunity in a new renewable sector, in a new retrofitting of homes, in a different way, a different lifestyle. They're going to open up all sorts of new opportunities, be it in forestry or environment management or managing our peatlands. You know, there are new opportunities that are going to emerge from this. And it isn't to be seen as some big burden that's being imposed upon us. This is actually will make our air cleaner, you know, our homes warmer, our enterprises more sustainable for the long term. And I think that's the way we should look at this. We're making changes now and starting now, because if we delay them, they will be at far greater burden and less opportunity for Irish people.
Thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you.
Richard Bruton, Minister for Communications, Climate Action and Environment, speaking with Aina Nilana. That's all we have time for this week. On sound, we had Sheila Nivuil. Our broadcast coordinator is Jarlath Holland. Our researcher is John Riley. And the producer is Sheila O'Callaghan. Don't forget, you can visit the website anytime you like. It's rte.ie/Mooney.